Okay, welcome, dear listeners and viewers. I'm here with Brooke. Now, my name is Richard. I'm from the Micro Solidarity Network, which is a global community of community organizers, I guess. And community organizer for me is like a very broad term. It means someone that runs a dinner party or someone that runs a festival or someone that is, hosting a community space in a local area. It could mean lots of different things, but recruiting all of the interesting community organizers that I meet around the world, and we're sharing lessons between each other. And so that's what this channel is about. Brooke is from Vibe Camp, which is the world's most exciting meetup of Twitter nerds. It's more than a meetup. It's quite a well, you'll tell us all about it. But you and I had a conversation last year after the first iteration of Vibe Camp. And I would say maybe anyone that's familiar with Micro Solidarity but not familiar with Vibe Camp, I can post the link so they can review the first episode because it sets a lot of the context. But I would expect a lot of people watching this one are probably more familiar with Vibe Camp and not with Micro Solidarity. There has been, because it's a Twitter thing, there has been a lot of public discourse about Vibe Camp. And my intention for this conversation is we don't get too stuck into the gossip. Like, the frame that I want to set for this is a conversation for community organizers. And so, like, let's try and focus on what did you learn as an organizer? What are you going to do differently next time? Like, what's the juice? What's the good business? And because it's so fresh, like we're a few days after the event, my intention as well is this is like a space to think out loud with me. It's not a space to like make any commitments. Like, just because we're dreaming of things today doesn't mean they're going to happen next year. Welcome, Brooke. Thank you for joining me again. It's a real honor that you share your learning process in public. Like, it's such a gift to all the other people that are watching along at home. Like, oh yeah, okay, you can learn some lessons the hard way. My first question for you is about, like, can you connect us to why Vibe Camp? Like, what would the dream success version of Vibe Camp look like for you?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It's one that I return to periodically because I think the answer to it is changing over time. Initially, I legitimately just wanted to hang out with my Twitter friends. Also, like sort of like lesser thread, but still a thread was that I was hoping to find a partner. I've been traveling to different Twitter meetups and things like that, and I'm sure my tweeting about my hunt for a partner is kind of contributed to all the discourse around the weird sort of like pressure to date at Vibe Camp and things like that. So, but yeah, it turned out. I think we realized through the course of the first one sort of taking shape that like a lot of people want to meet their Twitter friends, and that there are a lot of Twitter friends out there to meet and who also want that. And I think over time it's sort of growing into something a little bit different. I don't know if having like a space to like meet the other weirdos is broad enough. I think that's kind of pointing in the right direction, but I think that's kind of what it's turning into. I remember when I first joined Twitter, kind of looking around at one point and being like, wow, are we all like that one weird kid from our hometown who just somehow managed to find each other online? And I think there's some truth to that. And I think there's, there's my sort of favorite kind of comments after each Vibe Camp have been the people like, wow, I just didn't know that like I remember one of the tweets after the first Vibe Camp was I thought I was an introvert until, and I forget who tweeted it, but I thought I was an introvert until like I went to Vibe Camp and then I realized I just hadn't been around my people before. And so I think that's kind of like one of the bigger reasons like why, or answers to the question of like why Vibe Camp to me.
I mean, this is obviously my wheelhouse as well, like helping people find their people. I think it's extraordinarily important. I want to know, like, what happens for people when they find their people, according to you, like, because it's not just it doesn't seem to be just that, like, oh, I'm a weirdo and I'm tweeting, and then I go to the meetup, and then, oh, I've got some more weird friends. And like, people come away from it, like, listening to, I can also include like Critter, for example. I don't know if you've heard Critter's debrief, amazing kind of celebration of all the things, all the sort of transformative experiences of participating in this event. Like, it seems like people leave different from how they arrived. And I'm curious, like, how you would describe the difference in people.
I would hesitate to put all of it under a singular umbrella. I think for a lot of people, I think there's a range. I mean, I heard from, for the first Vibe Camp, I heard from some people who said it was the most transformative experience of their lives or up there. And I remember being, you know, humbled by that, but also it wasn't that way for me. And I kind of attributed that to just like age and life experience and things like that. I think I did changed personally from this one, but maybe in a different way than the attendees had. I feel like a sense of power maybe, and like confidence and just like solidity on the inside that I hadn't really felt before to that degree. But a lot of that has to do with my role in the event. I think there was one day I walked up, and I'm not gonna like name names during any of this, but there was one person I walked up to. It was either on the last day or the second to last day, and they were crying, and I like walked up, I was like, oh, you know, and I like, you know, checked to make sure it was okay that I joined, and they said, you know, these are happy tears, and like through the tears they kind of like got out that like they had just never felt that connected in their life before. And that's like, as an organizer, that is so, so powerful to hear those kinds of things. I'm trying to think if I could think of like a sort of umbrella that everyone, I could put all the ways that people transformed into when they did have the really transformative experiences. I think it's something in that direction, but yeah.
Yeah. I get what you mean about not trying to unify it too much, because it is really pluralistic. Like, people are having very different experiences. And what comes to mind for me about like, if someone's having happy tears about this feeling of connection, and I've seen some of the Twitter threads about, you know, people saying like, I've been really struggling for a long time, and I finally get the chance to like really connect and have a meaningful conversation and feel accepted, and, you know, all that good stuff, all that squishy, cozy, good stuff. In some respects, if people, like, you can't, as an organizer, you can't promise a transformational experience, right? You can't promise that you're going to find the love of your life, or like find this crew of friends that's going to be with you forever. You can't like exactly say that, oh, if you're feeling isolated, come here and you'll get belonging. You know, like, you can't promise that. But I feel like people at some level kind of have a hunch that maybe that's what they might get there. I think that's part of the appeal about why people come to an event like that. And so my question is like, that's a very high stakes, kind of high pressure position for you and your team to be in. And yeah, how do you hold that pressure of like, knowing that there's people showing up with a lot of like quite deep emotional relational needs? Like, how do you take care of them? Or like, how much responsibility do you even take for them having a good time?
That's been something that I think has surprised me a little bit in terms of my own emotional responses to all of the introspecting that's been happening on Twitter and the conversations that I've been having with people. Some of it, but like very, very small amount of it, I've actually been having like an emotional response to the criticism. And that's in the, there's a couple things where I felt like I could have done something better, but the vast majority of it, I'm not taking personally at all. And I don't know that I would have like expected that to be the case if I had like thought about it before Vibe Camp. I like realized like how high variance the responses to this would be. But I found when I get people coming to me saying like they wanted a certain kind of experience and they didn't find it, my response is more like, how, like, what can you do to make it happen next time? Like, I feel pretty strongly that like my project, the thing I bring to Vibe Camp is creating Vibe Camp and like running it, helping, you know, along with my team. And if there are things that people want to see more of there, you know, there's my ability, and even like what I think we should do as a team is somewhat limited. Part of what I think is kind of cool about Vibe Camp is that it's like, I think a lot of people, maybe not a lot, I don't know, I've heard from some people that it's helped them feel like they have a greater sense of agency. Cause it's like, I have noticed a few times, I think I give off some kind of energy where people will turn to me as though I'm like kind of their mom. And that was a somewhat frequent refrain during the course of this, like, you're an adult, you can figure it out. And I think that's helpful for some people, even though it's maybe not the easiest thing.
I just want to say on the mom thing, you know, Nati, who I work with, who is my wife, in community organizing stuff, sometimes people will put her in a mom position, and she'll say to them like, I'm not your mom. I can be your big sister, but I'm not your mom. And I love that. Like, it's such a sweet, like, because you have got a role to play. You know, people are looking to you for something, but fuck being someone's parent unless you have to be, you know? That's a lot of
Yeah, I like
responsibility.
that.
What have you done to help people make connections? Is it just like, hey, we're all going to be here, so come along and there'll be a random chaos of you'll bump in and some people will meet and some people won't? Or like, is there more sophistication to it?
That's something that we have been thinking a lot about, talking a lot about throughout. I mean, from the very beginning, we as a team like felt really strongly that something that we care about, and we care about deeper connections than can typically be formed in like a couple day event. So that was kind of what was behind, some people had cabin tickets, some people had tent tickets, and we tried to do a thing where you could choose either like have friends that you already chose to have be in your cabin, or to come up with a theme or not, and just say who wants to be in this cabin with me. And that was sort of an attempt to, like, here we have got months until Vibe Camp happens. You have all this time to get to know the people that you're going to be staying with and build connections beforehand. I'm not sure how successful that was. It'd probably be a good thing for us to add to the exit survey. We also had tent villages, and I think that also had like mixed success. We Pequot Parvenu put a great deal of work into building a thing that used NLP to match people based on their initial application results. And that kind of turned into a mess because we didn't really think through how to then have schedule calls with those groups of people. I think it was fairly successful though, because I was looking through, we were calling them squads. I was looking through the list and I saw several like actual friend groups in there already, which is like, oh, this is working. I know those people hang out together all the time in SF. But that was there's a lot of things that we kind of need to have figured out at the time when we sell tickets, because it is just really, really hard to ask people questions or get consent for things. Like that's the one thing that everyone's going to look at is the ticketing page. And I think if we gotten permission to like share email addresses with the rest of the group, it would have been easier to schedule calls. But our intention was to have facilitate by a volunteer or by an org member calls with the group and kind of like suggest that they carry it forward. I'm not sure if that's the best way. I'm in some communities where I get little messages from the group and it'll be like, hey, you're paired with these people. Go have lunch with them or something. And that kind of like, yeah, I never do them. That kind of I always have like, why should I go talk to these people? And maybe that's a messaging problem. And maybe it'd be better if we were actually, using information gathered from the applications to try to match people. You have a higher than average likelihood of, or not just random, of people there, but
I mean, this is part of the high variance experience too with Vibe Camp. So like with the gatherings that I'm running with Micro Solidarity, everyone knows that like the group process and the facilitation and the experience of belonging and the structures of community are like kind of part, they're kind of the point of why we're there. And so we've kind of got permission to bring a lot of structure and facilitation and process. And like, I can say, yeah, you're in this group and you're going to meet them once a day. And people go along with it because that's part of the program. But it feels a bit, there's plenty of people showing up to Vibe Camp who are just coming for a good time with their friends. And that like any kind of systemic facilitation is going to be really kind of cringy and inappropriate. But I did wonder, as I've been reading, you know, everyone's digesting of it, I wondered if like maybe there's a an opt-in, you know, where it's just like, I actually want more hands-on support. Like, I don't know many people. I really want to plug in. I want to go to this more structured program, or there's something that's a bit more, yeah. Maybe it's a minority of people that are like actually having a more sophisticated process for like, we will help you make friends, you know, because people are showing up for that. And some of them are like overwhelmed and stressed out and anxious and don't know how to do it.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I've been really pleased about with this sort of like collective sense making that's happening, because I'm already seeing some people come up with like ideas for things they could do on the first day, or like workshops they could host or calls they could do going up to it. And some people were talking about a bunch of different people creating like how to vibe guidebooks, which is great. I think it was initially at my debrief day on Monday, it was people in Philadelphia. Some people had suggested that we write how to vibe guidebooks, which is something we'll consider. But I think ultimately, like, if I tried to write like how to buy a guidebook, it would become something official, and like Vibe Camp would be really boring if it was just Brooke's vibes. Like, I think that it's going to be so much more rich and interesting and dynamic if it's something that the community comes together on. And also, just like, I think that all these great, beautiful minds working together to try to figure out like how to solve these problems is just magnificent. And it's, they will do a way better job than we ever could trying to just figure it out behind closed doors on our own.
I'm very curious if anyone can manage to write the literally put into text how to vibe. I suspect there might be some elements to it which are literally ineffable, but I support anyone trying, because that would be really cool to witness.
Yeah.
I've got so many questions in my mind. There's so many aspects of this thing. Last time we talked, one of the dynamics that we were turning over was, hey, there's a lot of, this is popular. People want this. Like, there's a lot of attention. There's a lot of like magnetism. People want to come in. And I think the last one was around 400 people or so. And this time is like nearly twice as big. One of the things we talked about was kind of like, how do you manage scale? You know, that obviously when things are small, you can just work on informal systems. A lot of people know each other already, so you like, you don't need rules, you don't need roles, you can just kind of like get by on trust. And as it gets bigger, like those systems need to become more rigorous, and you have more, yeah, people, more like random people, people with less connection or less shared context and so on. So I'm curious, what's your thinking about scale? Like, I'm sure you're feeling a lot of demand, or everyone's like, I want in, I want in, I want more of this, it's so good. Oh, you're so popular, you're like super famous right now. What are your thoughts about scale and intimacy, and like, how do you hold that? And yeah, how did it go becoming a lot bigger than last year? And yeah, all of those sorts of things.
So the way we did attendance and like ticket allocation this time was a bit of a mess for a number of reasons. One of that was that we started selling tickets earlier than any of us would have liked to under ideal circumstances. But Colby and I were kind of in a place where we needed to get jobs. We needed to, like, neither one of us had a job. We were, yeah. And it was, if we had to have full-time jobs and made this just a hobby project, it would have been really hard to do. So that was why, because the first Vibe Camp, I wasn't working at all. I've been working for DoorDash like in the initial lead up, and then things got too busy, and my parents were lovely and let me stay here and gave me food and things like that. And so I just focused on it, and you know, our flights, our Airbnbs, all of that we paid out of pocket, and we broke even. I think we had a little bit in we were green, it was fine, but we definitely didn't have like a profit to pay people out of. So that's why we started selling tickets as early as we did. And as far as like actually like how we allocated tickets, we ended up doing chaos mode, which was we were having some internal disagreements about how, you know, we should do ticketing. Some of us felt like we should do more curation, we should do referral links. And some of us felt like, you know, Vibe Camp is a public event. It should be fully public and inclusive as much as possible. And so chaos mode was like, why don't we do all of it? It felt like pretty on brand for Vibe Camp, but then was predictably rather chaotic. We did first come, first serve, followed by a period of like lottery, followed by applications. And we just, you know, there were a lot of things that sort of, it's hard to thought experiment your way through things that have this many variables. And by the time we got to the application process, we actually didn't really reject hardly any people. We had a small blacklist of people like who had been flagged to our attention that we investigated as a team and felt like were safety risks there, but it was very, very small. And then I think there was one resale that we denied because we went to the Twitter page and it was just blatantly racist and anti-trans stuff all over. So we're like, nah, you're not, this is not the Vibe Camp vibes. For most part, I mean, the process for the application segment of things was Colby and I would sit on a call and he would go through the application while I would look at the Twitter page. And it was either there wasn't much information or it was kind of like, not bad but seems fine, or you know, hard to get a vibes read, or they would be people like into IFS and meditation and EA and AI, and you're just like, clearly you belong at VibeCamp, like those are all. But it was really hard once we actually got into the application process to decide what metrics to use to determine whether somebody was a yes or a no, and we ended up just defaulting to like only safety risks were being rejected. And I personally don't think that's sustainable moving forward. I know a lot of events, Burning Man, it's kind of like a weird mixed place because technically you can get tickets, but it's hard to get in if you don't have a camp, from what I've heard, and which does require some kind of like social proof. I think that this vibe is precious, and it needs to be nurtured, and we have a lot of decisions to make about how to do that moving forward.
Yeah. This is the organizational nerd coming online for me, but I'm curious, why do you think that you all settled this year with chaos mode of like trying to do everything, like all the ideas, like why was that decision chosen?
We have, as a team, returned to the topic of values and principles frequently. We have spent hours talking about it. We have had those discussions be facilitated by multiple other people. And each time we've tried to come to like a cohesive agreement about what our values and principles are, it feels harder than it should be. So we've sort of landed on like they are emerging and they haven't quite emerged yet. I feel like there are a lot of things that if we're like not sure of the answer to, we would normally go up and look at our values and principles and see like the answer would be clear from there. It's just those have not been decided on as a team. And I think we're much, much closer now. We haven't done a full team sort of debrief after VibeCamp yet, but I think like were we to, those would be a lot clearer now than they were like after the last VibeCamp or in the lead up to this one.
I really like the connection between decisions and principles, like, because I'm a bit ambivalent about values, because it's really easy to say like, oh, we value transparency and inclusion, and you just rattle off some nice words and kind of go through a bullshit facilitated process to get everyone to say, yeah, that's good enough. But if they're actually like principles that you can measure a decision against, and you're like, no, we're doing this or that, you know, we're choosing this over that, we're doing inclusion over safety, or which one is it, you know, like the, you have to make these kind of trade-off calls. That sounds really good. It also makes me wonder about your role. You know, obviously you're playing a central figurehead type of role, but obviously there's like a lot of people involved. You've got this awesome team as well as all the volunteers, and then all of the participants are showing up with a lot of agency as well. So like, how do you conceptualize your role? Can you just come in and say, look, these are the principles because I'm Brooke and this is how it rolls? Or yeah, like how are you holding your position?
Asking the hard hitting questions
here. I'm gonna give you softballs after this, don't worry.
No, I love it. I love it. When we first, for anyone listening who doesn't know, the first VibeCamp was, someone had tweeted, was the first in-group meetup with attendance in the thousands. And I quote tweeted and said, do you guys actually want this to happen? Because if you do, like, I'll make it happen. And I asked who wanted to be involved with it, with me, and pulled the initial team from people who responded to that tweet. And we started meeting weekly, and like, huge shout out to everybody. We like the core members who've been around from the beginning, they have been meeting weekly. Mm-hmm. Since like 2021, almost. Wow. Like without Wow. stop. It's phenomenal. And you know, there are three of us now that are getting small but like livable paychecks, and most of the team is still just, this is just their passion, and it's incredible. I wanted it to be like, it felt like a co-created community project to me, and it seemed like the fairest way to manage doing that was something like non-hierarchical. And I tried to kind of not be the driving force behind it as much in the beginning. And then Grin on my org team was the one who had a call with me at one point. He's like, you are like the spiritual leader of this thing. You need to actually be a leader. You know, things aren't getting done quickly enough, decisions aren't being made, like the buck kind of stops with you and you need to like step into that role. And that was when I started, I think that was before we put me down as like the CEO, which is chief enthusiasm officer on our books. But that was kind of like a turning point for me when I realized that, yeah, like there are things that like, it is incredibly valuable and kind of necessary to have the whole team as part of for decision making and consensus. And that also things just run more smoothly if there's somebody who can just be like, no, or like, yes, for some of the like decisions that are not quite as close to issues that would have to do with like values and principles, I would say.
This makes sense to me. It's a topic that I'm just like extremely curious about, because it does seem like there's almost like a paradox between wanting to, like, this only kind of makes sense if it's collaborative. It only makes sense if like lots of people are activated, and like you're describing, they're coming from their passion. They're not coming for a paycheck, or like, you know, they're not trying to get something out of it. They're intrinsically motivated. That has to be done in a very open, collaborative way. And yet it seems like not always, like there are some other communities that would buck this rule, but for a lot of people it does seem to be more straightforward to have one person to turn to, you know, like if we're at a deadlock or something, to just say like, we've talked this to death, can you make a call? Or like there's some kind of coherence that comes out of one mind, and so long as people trust that one person, then it kind of helps things go along smoothly. But I'm really suspicious of centralized authority, you know, like it can really, I mean, I'm sure you've got a lot of blind spots and shortcomings, and I do too. And I'm playing leadership roles all the time. And I really hate the thought that I would build a community which is like a supersized version of me, you know, like what a terrible idea that would be. That the world doesn't need a giant me. The world doesn't need a giant Brooke. You know, you're good enough that size, you know, that's a really good size for you. So yeah, I'm just curious about it. I don't have like a hardline principle or like any critique or anything like how it should be or it shouldn't be. I'm just like trying to figure out how we play this role gracefully, you know. It also makes me then think about succession, basically. Like, do you have a sense that this role that you're playing is obviously important, and are you in it for the long haul, or are you thinking about like stepping back and making more, you know, like gradually? I don't mean like next year you're going to disappear, but have you thought about succession and like how this role moves to another person or moves to a group, or yeah, all of those sorts of things?
Yeah, so we brought on Dread Canary. We call him he's got multiple titles. He's either the aide to Vibe Camp or like our resident spreadsheet autist, which is a name I think he enjoys. He is very, very good at the kind of like organizational things that I struggle with. And it was kind of like a missing link on our team. So part of what I think he's really excited about is building documentation for everything, which is something we've intended to do from the beginning, and also just I struggle with it a lot. I have other skills, but I would love to have, you know, just like open source, like, you know, documents about our process and things like that. And that's something I've wanted to exist from the beginning, and it's not there right now. But I've been, you know, we were pretty busy in the lead up to this one, but we were taking steps towards like I would have him in meetings that I wouldn't have had him in otherwise, because I you know, ask him to take notes about like how I run it and things like that. So we are definitely like moving towards a direction where it would be at least possible. Like right now, if I handed over the reins of Vibe Camp, it would be just setting somebody up for disaster, because so much of it is in my head. And that's like not a good, like, you know, what if I get in the plane crash or something? Like that's not a good position for the org to be in, regardless of how long I stay. And I'm also feeling a lot like my goal in life was never to be an event producer. I've been really, really enjoying this and really enjoying the challenges. And I also think that once it gets to be stable, I'm going to want to find other projects to work on, regardless, like I will probably stay involved to some degree, but I would like to sort of have that degree eventually down the line be lessened probably if possible. So I'm definitely, we're not really, I need to fix things first, but then after that, I will spend more time thinking about that particular problem.
Yeah. It's cool to watch how you're doing it, because I think you and I have a lot of like the Venn diagram between our values is like quite, there's a lot of overlap, but there's also some different things. So like, for example, I think you have got more appetite for going big and going fast. And I'm like, no, slowly, 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 slowly. Let's keep it really tiny. And part of the appeal for me of going slow is like with the Micro Solidarity Network, this year we've got two summer camps happening. And I initiated the idea. We were on one of our community calls, and I said, hey, I've got this dream of like going to summer camp, and it's a Micro Solidarity summer camp. I don't even know what that means, but I want someone to organize that. And like two groups of people stood up to say, yeah, we're going to organize that. So there's one happening in the States and there's one happening in Europe in mid-July. So that was really exciting for me that that is happening and I'm playing a supporter role. You know, like I don't have to, I mean, I could do nothing and it would probably happen, but I'm like helping, okay, here's the financial system that works and like here's some lessons learned from past events and things like that. And my approach is like, well, it's almost like, what's the least that I can do and have this thing still grow? Because as it's growing, that means it's really being sourced from many different perspectives and people are really buying. There's a handful of people that are really buying in a deep way. And so what I'm sort of prioritizing the development of people who really feel a strong sense of ownership and are like willing to like cook this up. Whereas it seems like you've prioritized a bit more like, hey, look, loads of people want to come to this thing. Let's just get them in, and what's the quickest way to do that? And the quickest way to do that is you take some responsibility and you're like, here we go. So, like I say, it's just exciting for me to witness your trajectory running alongside me.
Yeah, this was an unsustainable amount of work for me personally, I think. It was manageable for this one, but I was pulling like 16-hour days and just had an onslaught of messages across all platforms, and it was a little bit insane. Manageable for this one, it would not be something that I could do every time. And also just like pulled me out of watching the big picture and being able to like analyze things from afar because I was so in the thick of it for a lot of it. And yeah, we rolled the dice on this one. We are very aware that we rolled the dice on this one. I was telling people before it happened that, you know, the two big failure modes that I could see was one, we scaled too quickly, or two, like the first one was just a magic moment in time. And yeah, I think we almost scaled too quickly. I think that, you know, had it been much bigger than it was, that could have been an issue. And I think like a lot of the sort of criticisms that the event has been receiving, probably it's hard to know for sure, but probably wouldn't have been the case had we been more intentional about how we grow.
I just want to explain. I did a big face because a giant beetle like this big just crawled onto my toe. It's fine. He's friendly, but it was just a little distressing moment. Okay, so on this thing about criticism, this is really interesting because again, like I think each of us as organizers bring our psychology and our baggage with us, right? So like my baggage is I want to be perfect. And so part of the reason that I move slowly is because it means that I can make everything just perfect and there's no criticism, there's no complaints. It's like everything's smooth. But there's a real dark side to having everything smooth and everything taken care of, you know, like it really prevents people from taking ownership and like really getting stuck in and negotiating about values and everything. And again, you've done it a different way and you've been exposed to a lot more criticism. Like the last few days of Twitter have been pretty intense. I'm sure you've got your homies around you making it okay, but still, it's pretty intense. Just, and I know this is fresh, so I don't expect you to have like a solid conclusion or anything, but just where your brain's at right now, what criticism have you heard that really lands as like, oh yeah, this is a lesson for me that I'm going to take with me to the next thing?
Well, okay. I there hasn't been much that's been said that I either predicted would be an issue or saw was an issue during the event and agree with. I think one of the bigger ones that I hadn't was around the final show. We had a there was a big show Saturday night that we put a lot of resources into. In my mind, they were just the only ones who asked. So it's like, yeah, sure. And we didn't you know, we didn't have a formal process for giving out grants. We mentioned that we had that mostly in the Discord server, but I'm fairly sure we mentioned other places too, but the fact that I'm not totally sure means that, like, how could other people know? But in my mind, it was much clearer that this was an attendee project, and I didn't know anything about the content going into it. And I, you know, we either should have done more messaging around this is not, like, official in that we didn't solicit them, and we didn't, you know, we didn't, like, vet the content. So that's one of the bigger ones that I didn't anticipate until I started hearing feedback about it. It, like, totally makes sense. I totally agree. That was a failure on our part. But I for the most part, I feel like the criticisms are things that, like, you know, like, I tried to have better internet there. It was very expensive. It was hard to manage. I didn't realize how much of a problem that was going to be, largely because people couldn't make calls when they needed to. And then things around the whole concept of harm reduction are a really big conversation that we're going to need to be having with both internally and externally. That was a bigger issue than I realized it would be. But a lot of things are just like we tried to have snacks out and you know, coffee and tea 24/7, and it didn't come together in time. We tried to do a lot of different things, or at least had the idea that we should, and it ended up being put aside because there were higher priority things. I don't know if that's a sort of rambling answer.
That helps. Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned the harm reduction, because that was another question that sort of lodged itself in my brain earlier when you were talking about, you know, you rejected a few applications for safety concerns. And so it just made me wonder, what have you done on safety? You know, like, what kind of risks are you thinking about? And what have you tried to mitigate those risks?
Yeah, so with this one, going into it, we pretty much, if somebody seemed like they were a physical or a sexual safety risk, in a way that, like, the team could kind of agree on, that was the metric that we used. I think that's a very different question than trying to be intentional about who comes, which is, you know, part of, like, the referral link thing. I think if we do referral links, we'll probably do, like, 80% referral links and 20% application based or something like that. So you still get in, people aren't necessarily connected. But then also there's a sort of, like, a standard of, like, if you bring somebody, you're responsible for them. At the event itself, like, I tried to communicate, like, please let me know. Please let one of the staff members know if somebody's making you uncomfortable. But we ran into a thing where people would tell me about things. I'm like, yeah, that sounds very bad. Those are bad vibes. But they couldn't tell me who it was, which is partially our badges were very small. It was hard to identify people. But I also feel like maybe there would be less of that if we had done referral links instead of applications for this one. So it's kind of like a tricky in between thing. And as far as, you know, we're going to have a lot more conversations as a team, but our public stance has been just straight no drugs. And some people did not listen. And then that meant that we didn't have any kind of a fallback for if people don't listen to us, how to keep them safe. So that's another thing that we're going to have some conversations as a team about to navigate, like, in a way that's, like, safe for people, keeps us, like, legally protected and things like that.
I guess that's going to depend on, like, state legislation and things, isn't it? Depending on
it's a whole bucket of things you have to pay attention to there.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's complex. I get the official story is no drugs. And I also get that probably a lot of people, it'll be a great place for them to take drugs in comparison to the other opportunities that they've got. And so, like, that's a complex situation where you're going to have to, like, hold an official line, and there's probably something else happening at the same time that you're, like, aware of and trying to manage responsibly without, it's like, oh, I can't. That's complicated.
Yeah. And just on a personal level, I heard a few stories about people, you know, taking some substances where it really enhanced their experience for whatever they're doing. We do have dance parties. We have an element of just, like, the party vibe. And I like that people can kind of go, it's almost like Mad Libs, like, build your own vibe camp. You can have the party experience. You can have the deeper connections or whatever. But I do think particularly within this scene of people who trend towards, you know, there are, like, a lot of, like, actually diagnosed, like, high functioning autists there. There are people with, like, extreme social anxiety. And I think that they're, you know, myself included, I tend to overdrink when I drink at parties, and it's generally, like, sensory sensitivities. It's so, and things like that. And I would love to maybe do more to encourage the people for whom taking some kind of substances is not enhancing their event. Mm. It's sort of like a social lubricant, like to find ways to sort of like nudge those people away from that tendency.
Mm. It's such a complex responsibility. Like, it's one thing if the law had nothing to say about it, but then even then that's complicated, but then you bring the law into it. That's complicated. Did you have any, like some of the gatherings that I go to, there'll be a support system in place for bad vibes of a more like subtle nature, like I'm sad, you know, like, or I'm not having a good time. Like, did you have any, I don't know, like I've been to a gathering once where there were people that would, their job, they would take a shift, and like one night they would go and they would just walk around the space looking for anyone that was lonely or sad, or, you know, like, and they would go and check in on them. Like, did you have any of that, that sort of infrastructure in place?
Yeah. So the way our volunteer program worked, people were asked to do 1 6-hour shift per day of the event, except for Sunday was sort of all hands on deck roughly. And then, we asked them to show up a day early on Wednesday, and our shifts were three different types of shifts. One, we call them shape rotators and word cells. So for shape rotation, that was like setup, equipment, moving. It was all like the sort of like logistical side of things. And then the word cells were more people oriented. And so some of those shifts were just sitting at check-in, which is the place people know to go if they need like medical help, if they need to like contact an organizer. It was just like, there are people here. And then they were also like checking people in as they arrived. And then we also had vibe patrol, which was my attempt to do something like that. Their instructions were to like wander around, look for people who seem alone, check in with people, make sure everyone's doing okay, that kind of thing, escalate things. We had Andrew Rose, who's amazing, didn't have any scheduled shifts. He was on call as sort of our like crisis, like conflict mediator and like mental health crisis person, which was phenomenal. He did a great job. And one of the things that I heard from the people who had been on Vibe Patrol was that it was very hard to tell if someone was sitting by themselves because they were taking like a necessary moment to like regulate their nervous system, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. because they were feeling left out. So that's something that we're going to have to think about moving into the next one, because we absolutely want to encourage and not interrupt the people who are just sort of being with themselves and resetting and need quiet. We did have a sanctuary tent, which we didn't put, we thought we'd have more time and bandwidth in the days during setup to sort of decorate some of these spaces. And we ended up being a little bit crushed under other kinds of logistics. So we didn't really set up the sanctuary tent in the way that we had were hoping we would. But that was sort of intended to be the place where you just needed like, you know, the tea house is like a 1 or 2 on chill, because people are talking, this is like a 0 on the chill meter, is like fully chill as possible. Just for like, you know, if you need that space. So those are all sort of like things that feel solvable, but also feel like there need to be a lot more conversations, both internally and with the community about how to manage.
I'm such a big fan of the Vibe Patrol. I was at a burn once and had a very intense experience while I was on a cocktail of drugs that I didn't even know what I had. And I was by myself, and there was a moment that was really intense and bad. And then someone from the Vibe Patrol came and found me and made such a transformational experience out of that moment, you know, like, I, those people are angels, and I love it. It makes me wonder more generally, were there any organizing structures or technologies or techniques or anything that you did as a team where you're just like, that was sick, like everyone should know about that, like this is a really good process, or something that you're like definitely keeping next year?
I don't, that's a tough question to answer. I feel like a lot of what we did was like good enough for this event. Mm. Some of it was like very, very close along that line of like just barely good enough. But I feel like we have like quite quickly outgrown a lot of the things that we're using. You know, I want to have a conversation. A lot of our organization happened through the Discord, and that was fine for the first one. It feels not really quite as fine now. It's just, and we have like a million different sources of information. Our tech stack is somewhat all over the place. I mean, these are not things that I like feel bad about personally. I feel like they are failures. You know, they just, there are things that we can improve upon. I think having a staff house is great. I want to carry that energy forward, even if we have like too many people to fit in it. There was one building on the site that slept like 21 people, and it ended up being a little chaotic. And you know, some of the early arrivals, I let sleep there, intending for them to go out to their regular spots later. And then we sort of had like a mix of people who are volunteers and not volunteers. But there are a couple mornings where we'd get up, we had a little coffee maker in the side room there. She didn't have to go all the way to the dining hall to get coffee. And we'd be able to sit on the porch, which is exactly what I wanted out of that, is just like have a way for us to connect more, chat outside, like the context of like running it, and just have like a moment, you know, moments together. I did really like that. I want to carry that forward. For events that are overnight, I think it's really useful to have the people who are helping run it kind of like have a space.
Yeah, I really with our events, I really believe in, you know, there's a kind of role modeling where the people that have status kind of set the tone and then other people want to emulate them. I really think of that in terms of relationships. So like, instead of it being one person who's a high status person and we're going to copy that person, it's more like, no. The way that you and I as co-hosts are interacting is setting the tone for other people. Like, this is how we treat each other, with like respect and curiosity and fun and affection and whatever. And for me, the way to get that is that, yeah, for the team, for the hosting team, to really connect and have space to like develop that sense of trust and companionship and care and like loosey-goosey funniness. And if the team has got that going on, oh, there's another giant bug, Christ. Oh God, that's so creepy. If the team's got the good vibes, then it like it's kind of effortless for everyone else to pick it up, you know. I noticed that It's become nighttime since I've started talking to you, so that sort of seems like God is telling me to wrap up pretty soon. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. I had a billion questions, but maybe they're not important. Maybe at this stage, it's more like, with no questions coming from me, like what's on your mind? Like what sort of thoughts are running around in your head when you're losing sleep at night? Or like what's really got your attention as you're thinking about what happened and what comes next? And like, yeah, I don't want to tell you what the question is. I want to know what's been bubbling away.
I think like, the thing that has been coming most often and the strongest to my mind is just this, the phenomenon of everyone going to Twitter and then talking about it, and the way that has changed the actual experience itself. Like Vibe Camp hasn't really ended yet. It feels like it has moved to the digital space, and it is like, I think people are kind of like all joining together in this like really interesting sort of social experiment that I couldn't have really predicted. It's an honor to be part of it, and it's just fascinating to watch. I think that is the most interesting thing about Vibe Camp to me is the way that people are doing that, and I don't know that I have any more like coherent thoughts about it. I do want to say like just thank you again to anybody listening to this who like contributed in whatever way. I heard lots of stories. There was somebody who just like stepped up on one of the buses and was like, hey, we're going to do speed friending. Here's how you opt into it. And that, I didn't reach out to that person. I didn't make that happen. Like stories like that, or of people finding someone who's having a rough time and doing what they can to make it better, all the way up to like the volunteer team and my staff. Colby just was working morning to like 3-4 a.m. every night, like just put in a phenomenal amount of work, and my volunteers were amazing. I went into it. That was the thing I was most excited about with this Vibe Camp, was my volunteer team. We had an orientation call that most of them were at, and there were just so many points of connection. It made me feel like, oh yeah, I've done a good job. If these people like all have these sort of like intersecting interests, or you know, people have been involved in the same organizations before and didn't know it, and they just did an incredible job. And a few of them went way above and beyond, and I'm so pleased to have these kinds of people, you know, supporting us and helping us get better and learn how to do this better. And also shout out to Yassine, who ran all the dance parties, which I think was way more work than anyone expected it to be. just I've just it's just incredible. Like, I know there are things to improve, but I am just floored at like how much people came together for this.
I asked you this last time, and I want to know again, what's your wildest dreams, best case scenario for what this is gonna turn into?
I feel that there are a growing number of people, of groups, of whatever, that are all sort of working towards a future where not just humanity, but the planet, the universe, whatever, is flourishing. And we're all kind of doing it from different directions. And it feels a little bit like, you know, proto-network state, but I, you know, that term has so much baggage. It means like specific things and different things to different people. But it feels like we are almost like collectively, you know, you guys and Fractal and the neighborhood and Medley and all these people who are experimenting in new ways of like community and living together and gathering together. It just feels somehow, I don't know, like it could be leading to something really incredible. And I don't know what that looks like, but I am sure excited to be witnessing it.
It's true. It's true. It does feel like there's a movement of movements, you know, like different characters stepping up to try and find a new way of being together. And it's, I can say from my own experience, it's super fun to participate in. And I'm really grateful. I mean, I know that I'm not the only one. I'm conveying the gratitude of thousands of people for what you're doing. And not just you, but like I say, your team, like your incredible team. And not just the team of official people that have a role, but everyone showing up with that attitude of like contribution. It's really important. It's really making a big difference. It's really rad to see. So thank you very much. I don't think I have any more questions or the only other thing I think to say is that I think you already know this, but I want to make it official that you have my support. Like, if you've ever got any kind of organizing question or issue or any kind of need, I want to help. This, I think this is a really important thing that's happening, and I'm here for you.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Let's leave it there.